The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Whatever happens with the new travel restrictions that are coming out of the White House, it's pretty clear that the Trump administration intends to keep immigration on the front burner. For refugees, getting asylum in the United States, which was never an easy feat before, no matter what President Trump may like to say, looks even more difficult now. Contributor Jake Halpern has been visiting a safe house in Buffalo, New York, where hundreds of refugees are waiting, hoping for asylum. Some are there just for a short while, but for some, it becomes a life of limbo when they discover that they can't stay, but they can't go home either.
How many days did it take you to get from when you ran out of your house to when you arrived at Vive?
I think it took me about a week.
About a week.
Safely, yeah, a week.
And all you had was this little...
All I have is a little satchel.
The little satchel,
yeah. And a filthy, very, very dirty jacket that I had problems with the immigrations when I was like changing flights and all. They were looking at me as like, are you mad? What is this you're wearing? And they would ask me so many questions, you know.
Marshall ran out the back door of his house in Zimbabwe in the middle of the night. He says he grabbed his wallet, his passport. Meanwhile, hitmen for President Robert Mugabe were at the front door. Marshall is 28. He was part of Zimbabwe's youth party, which was running against President Mugabe, who has held onto power since 1980. As the youth party grew, Marshall says he was arrested and then harassed by the police.
I got persecuted so many times. I got beaten up so many times. I got arrested so many times. But I soldiered on because I believed in my cause. And what I thought was, Mugabe won't kill me. If he kills me, it's going to be an obvious move.
But a friend of his inside the government told Marshall that his name was actually on Mugabe's hit list. That very night, men showed up at Marshall's door, and he had to run for it. A few days later, he's sitting in a motel room in New York City with a couple other guys he'd fled with, and they're trying to figure out what's our next move. Then another guy from Zimbabwe, who's already living in Canada, sends him a message. You gotta go to Buffalo, New York, 50 Wyoming Street. There's a house there. They call it Vive.
Hello, Lori, help us. Hello. Hi, come on in, hon. Okay, this is the entranceway for Vive. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, the doors are open and they're secured.
This is Sister Beth Niederprum. She's a social worker at Vive.
Yes, I'm a sister of St. Francis from the Newman Communities. About 33 years ago, 34 now, there were six communities of sisters in this area that saw the need during the 80s when El Salvador, Nicaragua...
Basically, when people were fleeing war and violence in Latin America in the 1980s, where they tended to go was Canada. You got to remember, back then, the Canadian prime minister was Pierre Trudeau. His son Justin is prime minister now, and they welcomed immigrants. A lot of people came through Buffalo because there's actually a bridge at the edge of town that goes across the Niagara River directly into Canada. And then, like now, migrants often showed up with little money and unprepared for the Buffalo winter.
they had to wait to get appointments. So a couple of the sisters saw this, and they said, we have to help these people. They can't stay in the streets, and so we needed to shelter them. So we began to take them into our convents.
The sisters housed and fed people, and as the need grew, they bought this small old Catholic schoolhouse down on the east side of Buffalo. Some 33 years later, Sister Beth says more than 100,000 people have passed through Vive.
I would say what we do is basically take care of the needs of anybody that walks in this door and try to make them feel welcome and safe. And that if there's any medical needs, we'll try to take care of them.
Well, we can go this way.
To my left is my office, which is a social work office. I think that's somebody getting a shot in the nurse's office. Doctor and nurse are present to us every 5-7 days a week, really.
If it sounds a little bit crazy in the background, that's because it is. People are running everywhere, and Sister Beth is leading us down the old hallway that goes down the center part of the school.
This is a living kind of sitting area.
It looks actually like where I went to the Buffalo Public Schools. It looks like one of those really wide hallways, high ceilings, old creaky floors.
We've painted and tried to upgrade and keep it, but it's 100 and some people that have been using it 20 some years, 30 years almost. So it's been used, but we do try to keep it up. And there's
people from more than 75 countries have passed through Vive in recent years. People from Haiti, Jordan, Malawi, Bangladesh, Qatar, Thailand, Ukraine, Tibet, you get it. They come from all over. This many people in one small house inevitably attracts attention, and it's not exactly a secret. Canadian and American border agencies, they know about Vive. In fact, one staff member told me that Border Patrol agents actually circle the outside of the building pretty regularly. As a result, most residents tend to stay inside. There are people everywhere. Sister Beth and I were walking up a stairwell, and
Hi.
Tucked away in the little dead end behind it were two girls playing with broken dolls.
In between the door and the radiator.
I mean, everywhere you looked, there are people in the nooks and crannies.
Hi, Jennifer.
When you walk into the old classrooms, it's just rows of bunk beds, all draped with sheets, people trying to scratch out just a little bit of privacy for themselves.
There's how many beds?
Right now, probably 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, about 12.
And it's a fairly small room.
Mm-hmm. There's probably almost 300 people waiting either to go to Canada or to get asylum in the U.S.
Why so? I mean, I was here maybe a year ago. What accounts for this?
We're not sure if it's a political issue.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Or the amount of people that are just displaced in this world.
On the one hand, Vive is a sanctuary. It's a shelter. It houses, it feeds, it gives medical care to all the people that pass through. But there's another really important part of what it does. It helps people get their information and their documents all arranged and then sets up appointments on the Canadian side of the border with the refugee processing unit.
So your husband has the original marriage certificate?
Yes, sir.
And he'll bring it to the border?
Yeah, he will bring it.
Mariah Walker is the Canadian services manager, and she's the one that makes appointments at the border for all the Vive clients and helps people figure out whether they're ready to make the crossing.
And what about his birth certificate? Does he have the original?
I think we need to ask him.
This is Vicky.
Yeah, do you have his phone number?
I'm sitting there with her and Mariah. She and her two kids, Peter and Isaac, left home in Nigeria just 10 days ago, and they're now en route to meet with Vicky's husband, who's already made it to Canada.
Hello?
Hi, this is Mariah from Vive. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm here with your wife.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So I wondered if you had your original birth certificate with you in Canada.
No, it's not with me.
Okay.
It's back home, but she has the photocopy of my birth certificate, though.
Yeah, but photocopies don't really have true... They can't tell if it's real or not.
I will try and get it.
Okay, that would be great. Okay.
Is she okay now with the kids?
Yeah, you're here on speaker. She's here.
Hello.
Hello. Are you guys okay?
We are okay. We are doing well.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What of Peter and Isaac?
They are fine. Okay? They are in the children's lounge room there. They are watching cartoon.
Okay.
This is pretty much where all the interviews are held and any intake is made. So this is, can be a happy or sad place.
Sad in terms of what exactly? In terms of finding out whether they're eligible to go to Canada?
Exactly. Yeah. And whether they're going to be able to meet their relatives or not. And whether they can get into the over the border or not. We try to keep them moving through the process of what it means to either settle in Canada or settle in the United States. And, you know, you're safe here. That's my biggest thing. You're safe.
And part of the reason that people feel safe here is that no one's pushing them to talk. In fact, there's a policy at Vive not to ask people why they left their home country. If people want to talk about it, they can. But Sister Beth says, for a lot of folks, the memories of persecution, imprisonment, torture, they feel too painful or too dangerous to talk about.
I mean, that's one of the things that I have to say. I have to build trust.
Yeah.
Trust us that we're trying to help you, even if the truth doesn't feel right to you. When they tell the truth back in their homeland, they get shot. You get shot or hurt or punched or something. So, or raped. I mean, come on. So why would you tell the truth?
You're listening to the New Yorker Radio Hour. Contributor Jake Halpern has been reporting for over a year on Vive, an old schoolhouse in Buffalo, New York, where a community group gives housing, meals, and legal advice to people hoping for refuge in Canada or the U.S. He was there earlier in the winter.
Most of the people who show up at Vive, they want to go to Canada. They know that once you're admitted at the border, you get immediate access to a whole bunch of social services in Canada and a decision on your case within 60 days. The U.S., by contrast, offers almost no support, and most applicants wait years for a decision. In 2015, Canada granted asylum to almost 60% of applicants. And all of this is giving Canada a kind of golden reputation among refugees. And Marshall, remember, he was the guy from Zimbabwe who fled his home. He knew about this too.
We thought, like, you know, the Canadian policy to immigrants is a bit friendly. The police in the United States, we believe, is a little bit hostile. You know, it's not that welcoming to immigrants. So that's why we hit Canada on their first priority.
The trick is getting admitted at the border. You either need an anchor relative, a close family member already living there, or you need to be an unaccompanied minor. Marshall had neither of these. And when he gets to Vive, he learns this, and they tell him,
but guys, if you don't have relatives in Canada, you cannot cross the border. There is no other way.
Well, that's pretty much true. There is another way, a kind of loophole in the border law, which says if you sneak across the border and show up in the interior of Canada and ask for asylum, you can kind of get around the anchor relative requirement. But in the depths of a Canadian winter, passage is very risky.
We try to ask her, is there a workaround or is there some other plan that can be made? You know, she was like, if you don't have relatives, you are not entering Canada. And that's it.
Canada's out now for you.
Canada's out. And going back to Africa is a no-no. It was out of the options.
So for Marshall, that means staying at Vive. When I met him, he'd already been there for 4 months. He'd applied for political asylum in the U.S., but assumed that the wait could be as much as 2 or 3 years. Then Trump's executive order threw all the standard U.S. immigration processes into question. When I talked to Marshall back in December, he was waiting for a work permit so that he could earn money for rent and food and eventually move out of Vive. But he knew the work permit would take at least 8 months to come through. 8 months he'd have to spend living in a room at Vive with 24 other men from around the world. And though the Vive staff and residents do what they can to keep the place clean and organized, the truth is, Vive is a small, crowded, rundown schoolhouse that's full to the rafters with people who've carried their trauma with them.
You know, in the middle of the night, if you get into some of our hostels, you might think, why are people not asleep in here? They'll be talking in their dreams, like they'll be talking out loud. nightmares all over the place, hallucinations, I don't know what you call them, but people will be talking, chanting, singing. You might even say, hi, how are you doing? Because you might think that I've actually said hi. But I'll be asleep.
Wow.
So at the very least, you're looking at 5 more months here.
Yeah.
And how do you wrap your head around that? How do you think about that?
Well, in as much as I might want to have opinions on it, I can't do anything about it. You might have positive feelings or negative feelings about it, but at the end of the day, you have nothing to do about it. Just wait patiently and embrace the reality. No, patience.
Well, patience and work. Sister Beth tries to keep everyone busy with chores. Long-term residents like Marshall often end up in charge of one of the work teams.
Blue team.
Talk us through your day. Like, tell me what your day is like.
Well, basically, I wake up in the morning, look on my schedule if I have a chore to do, and then organize my team. After that, just look for some entertainment. Sleep. I sleep most of the day.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, how many hours are you sleeping?
Half of the day, probably.
Down on the first floor, right outside where the old principal's office used to be, there's this big bulletin board on the wall. And it's important because this is where each day a list of names is posted.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 names. And these are the names of people who tomorrow morning at 6:30 are going to go to the border.
And this is when they came to Vive, and then what language they need.
Creole, French, Tigrinya, which I think is the language of Eritrea, Arabic.
As Sister Beth is showing me this, there's this guy kind of pressing up behind me, trying to get a look over my shoulder.
Were you checking the
list?
Yeah,
I was checking my name, yeah.
Was your name on the list?
It's not there.
Not there.
Yeah.
How many days have you been
here? Last Friday.
Yeah. So is this every day you're checking?
Yeah, of course.
Where are you from, sir?
I'm from Eritrea.
Eritrea. I'm Sister Beth. How do you do?
Nice to meet you.
And your name?
Adam.
Adam. Nice meeting you.
The only people that aren't checking this board are the long-termers. Marshall, people that can't go to Canada, probably because they don't have an anchor relative, and they're just stuck here in limbo indefinitely. When we're done looking at the bulletin board, we get to talking with this guy named Ulysses. He's a small, jovial man. I'd seen him everywhere in the building, welcoming people, giving everyone tours. I mean, he was almost like the mayor of Vive.
And so tell me your situation now. You're here at Vive, but you have a son. Where is your son?
My son now is in Canada. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He is applying for a refugee protection in Canada.
He and his 16-year-old son, they fled El Salvador because of the rampant gang problems there. But Ulysses, he'd actually been here before. He came through Vive alone back in 2009. He left his son with some family back in El Salvador, and he tried to get refugee status in Canada. When his application was denied in Canada, he was sent back to El Salvador. He spent some time getting money and documents together, and then he tried it again, coming back through Buffalo en route to Canada, this time with his son.
When I talking with the lawyers, and they say, oh, you can't go again because you only have an opportunity for your case. But my son don't come in the before with me.
I understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now...
So your son went by himself?
Yeah.
Ulysses' 16-year-old son went to the border alone. He was admitted, he's now applying for asylum, and he's living about 2 hours away in Hamilton, Ontario, with another refugee family.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love my son. I had only a son. He's all for me, you know, and I am all for him. Okay. It's hard, you know, but he working hard there. He is in the school, in the high school. Mm. I talking every day with him
on the phone.
And in a time, he say me, hey, Dad, my friend invite me for go to the Niagara Falls. And I thinking, oh, I want to see you, you know?
Niagara Falls is actually only about 20 minutes away. The problem is, stepping outside of the building poses a real risk for Ulysses. Border Patrol agents, they circle sometimes, and the chances that he'd get picked up were real. But he just wanted to see his son.
And I say, hey, I want to see you. I want to go to for the Niagara Falls in the U.S. side, and he in the Canadian side.
I know the spot he's talking about, and there are these big metal binoculars you can put a quarter in and then look across Niagara Falls and kind of just barely make out the Canadian side. And that's exactly what Ulysses did. Put in the quarter, looked in the viewfinder, and saw the blurry image of his son waving to him in the distance.
And then we see, you know, too far. Yeah. You understand me?
I understand.
Yeah.
At that moment, Sister Beth swoops in. She puts her arm around him and just very tenderly escorts him back to her office. The kind of amazing thing was about 10 minutes later, I'm in the hallway and I see Ulysses giving a newly arrived family a tour.
Diana, está en la... Aquí es lugar donde usted va a venir para agarrar su almuerzo.
He's beaming, he's welcoming, he's pointing things out. He's showing this kind of incredible human resilience, but he's also busy. This is very much Sister Beth's vision for how Vive should work. This is why she assigns tasks to everybody, why she checks in with a 30-some long-term residents every day if she can. Because too much time to think about what they've been through, what they've lost, what they left behind, it's a short road from there to despair.
There comes a time when you have to face the reality. There comes a time when you miss the people that you left.
This is Marshall again. Since he left Zimbabwe, his brother's been beaten up and harassed by the police. His parents' home was burned to the ground. In fact, he didn't even know for a week whether his parents survived the fire. He was just left wondering.
There comes a time when you really feel what's going on, you know? So when I feel like I'm in that position, that's when I say that I just retire myself to sleep.
Do you feel the sleep restores you, or like what's going on?
I usually have like a music speaker by my pillow. And every time I sleep, I play music on that speaker. So I use music, I use it as a remedy of my soul, you know. So every time I go to sleep, it's not that I'll be like sleeping. I'll be just closing my eyes. I mean, that's just resting the body, but then the brains will be at work. If there was a method or way that, you know, they could flush my memory and remove everything I know and start afresh, I would really appreciate that.
But hold on, that blows my mind. For real? Like if you could push a button and it was all gone?
Yeah.
Everything, but
yeah.
The good with the bad. I mean, like your memories of your parents.
There's more bad than good. So I'd appreciate that. There's more bad than good. So with me then, I have just resolved to myself that, well, I have nothing left for me in Africa. I think that I'm just gonna settle and start a new life in the United States, forget about everything that happened to me in the past, and start afresh.
I'm wondering, you see people come and go.
Yeah.
Constantly coming and going, coming, going on to Canada, and I'm wondering if that, in a way, makes it actually harder for you because you see all these other people kind of getting on with their journey.
Well, like most of the times I work at the security checkpoint there, I see people coming in. We tell them we're fooled up, we don't have space. They would like opt to sleep like on the floor, like in the corridors. At one point I might think, am I in a place that I don't deserve to be? How about those guys that are sleeping on the floor? How about those that are going to sleep on the like on the hallways for 2 weeks? At least I have a bed.
I want to hear your music, man.
I thought you'd forgotten about it, man. Well, it's not much, man. It's not much. It's just I.
What are some of your favorite songs?
Like, one of my favorite songs from Bob Marley is called Three Little Birds.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that one.
Of course, yeah.
I like the message. I like the, you know, I like them when they try to convince you that everything is okay, in as much as in reality it is not okay. It's like convincing a hungry kid, you know, to say, don't worry, don't cry, I'm going to buy you some candies. But he is hungry at that moment. So it is that belief, hope, and trust that is going to make him keep quiet or stop crying. It's the message that Bob Marley tells me, that every little thing is going to be okay. Someday, somehow. I'm not the first person to be involved in such a predicament, in such challenges. There's things that I'm going through have been experienced by other people way back in the past. And they went through it. So it's just a phase that I'm in. So I just have to, you know, soldier on. And even if it takes long, it will come to pass someday.
The question is when, and that still remains unclear. I last saw Marshall and Ulysses a couple of months ago, and I decided to call up and see how they were doing. They're both still at Vive. Marshall just started volunteering at a local community farm, a greenhouse, so he's getting out of the building more, which might be a good thing. The mood at Vive, it's tense. Mariah Walker, the staffer who helps people get their papers in order for Canada, she said that Trump's executive orders have people so worried that a few have just up and left in the middle of the night, ran for it in winter, trying to cross the border illegally. She told me she never thought it would be her country that people were running from.
That's Jake Halpern, reporting from Buffalo. His story about Vive in The New Yorker is called The Underground Railroad for Refugees.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.